servant. Fully understanding his eternal relationship, his devotional service is called Abhideya. When one attains this stage, he is called a Bhagavata or a Vaishnava. This indicates that he is free from contamination and material attachment. This is confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita 7:28. Everybody knows that. They all memorize Bhagavad Gita in school, right? Yesham Tvantikatam Papam Chananam Punya Karmanam Te Dvanda Moha Nirmukta Vajanti Mam Dridavrata. Persons who have acted piously in previous lives and in this life, whose sinful activities are completely eradicated, and who are freed from the duality of delusion, engage themselves in my service with determination. A brahmana may be a very learned scholar, but that does not mean he is free from material contamination. A brahmana's contamination, however, is in the mode of goodness. In the material world, the three material modes of goodness, passion, ignorance, and all are simply different gradations of contamination. Unless a brahmana transcends such contamination and approaches the platform of unalloyed devotional service, he cannot be accepted as a Vaishnava. An impersonalist may be aware of the impersonal Brahman feature of the Absolute Truth, but his activities are on the impersonal platform. Sometimes he imagines the form of the Lord, Saguna Upasanai. But such an attempt is never successful in helping one attain complete realization. The impersonalist may consider himself a brahmana and may be situated in the mode of goodness, but nonetheless he is conditioned by one of the modes of material nature. This means that he is not yet liberated, for liberation cannot be attained unless one is completely free from the modes. In any case, the Mayavadi philosophy keeps one conditioned, but if one becomes a Vaishnava through proper initiation, he automatically becomes a Brahmana. There is no doubt about it. The Garuda Purana says, Brahmanam sahasrebhya satcha yaji visheshyate satta yaji sahasrebhya sarva vedanta paraga sarva vedanta vitkotya vishnu bhakto visheshyate. Out of many thousands of brahmanas, one may become qualified to perform yajna. Out of many thousands of such qualified brahmanas, one may be fully aware of the Vedanta philosophy, and out of millions of learned Vedanta scholars, there may be one Vishnu Bhakta, or devotee of Lord Vishnu. It is he who is the most exalted. You have to be careful with verses like that. If we think that that means every devotee is something very, very special, it's very good. And if we think I am very special, then it's very bad. Mm-hmm. That tendency will always be there. I'm great. I'm doing Artik and everything, right? Devotees should become very humble to think of special mercy that we can serve the Lord. Unless one is a fully qualified Brahman, he cannot advance in spiritual science. A real Brahman is never envious of a Vaishnava. If he is, he is considered an imperfect neophyte. Impersonalist Brahmanas are always opposed to Vaishnava principles. They are envious of Vaishnavas because they do not know the goal of life. Natevyadu Swartikatim Hi Vishnu. However, when a Brahmana becomes a Vaishnava, there is no duality. If a Brahmana does not become a Vaishnava, he falls down from the Brahmana platform. This is confirmed in Srimad Bhagavatam 11.5.3. Na Yavajananti Stanad Brashta Katant Yada. He goes down. We can actually see the age of Kali. Many so-called Brahmanas are envious of the Vaishnavas. The Kali-contaminated Brahmanas consider deity worship to be imaginative, Arche Vishnu Shiladir Guru Shu Naramatir Vaishnave Jati Budi. You know that one? One who thinks that the Arche Vishnu Shiladir, that is just a stone, the deity is a stone, or wood, or paint, or whatever. Or Guru Naramatir, he thinks the Guru is an ordinary person. Or Vaishnava Jati Budi, he's judging a Vaishnava according to his body, is not good. Such a contaminated Brahmana may superficially imagine a form of the Lord, but actually considers the deity in the temple to be made of wood or stone. Similarly, such contaminated Brahmanas consider the Guru to be an ordinary human being, and he objects when a Vaishnava is created by the Krishna conscious movement, because they have to be an Indian or a Hindu. Many so-called Brahmanas attempt to fight us, saying, how can you create a Brahmana out of European or American? A Brahmana can be born only in a Brahmin family. They do not consider that this is never stated in any revealed scripture. It is specifically stated in the Bhagavad Gita, Chaturvarna Mayashistam Guna Karma Vibhagasha. According to the three modes of material nature and the work ascribed to them, the four divisions of human society were created by me. Thus, a Brahmana is not the result of the caste system. He becomes a Brahmana only by qualification. Similarly, a Vaishnava does not belong to a particular caste. Rather, his designation is determined by the rendering of devotional service. Om Agyana Timirandasya Yananjana Shalakaya Chaksura Militanyena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Karamayam Dadati Prapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavam Scha Shri Rupam Sajajatam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakan Vitamstha Sadvaitam Savarutam Purijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakan Vitamstha Pancha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyedra Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namaha Krishna Todiya Padapankaja Panjanantam Adyaiva Me Visitu Manasaraja Hantam Prana Prayama Kamaye Kapavata Pittai Kantavaro Dhanavido Mananam Kutasthi. All right. There's one Christian preacher who is like the most, like one of the biggest at the moment. And he has a team of five people that while he's lecturing, they pray for him to lecture nicely. So hopefully, maybe all of you can pray. Because if you're sitting here, we don't want to waste your time. So you have to pray that Krishna can. Of course, here there's a lot of lila that's all very instructive. Everybody probably knows the whole Amoga lila, huh? You know Amoga lila?
I did.
He's teaching in Hong Kong now in the university. Well, Amoga was the son-in-law of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. And he never liked when Lord Chaitanya was coming in the house. So finally, Lord Chaitanya was there for eating, honoring prasadam, and Amoga criticized him very heavily, said he was eating too much. So Sarvabhauma was terribly upset, and also his wife. And Lord Chaitanya said, "No, it's true, and you know you shouldn't worry about it. I am eating too much." So Sarvabhauma took a stick and was chasing him all day, you know, to beat him with a stick. And the wife was praying that her daughter would become a widow, you know, because they offended Lord Chaitanya. And Lord Chaitanya was preaching to Sarvabhauma that, you know, it's not a big deal, that he shouldn't get so upset. But Sarvabhauma just couldn't take it. So then after a short time, Amoga got cholera, a very serious disease, you know, fever, and many people, even now people die from cholera. You have to get your cholera vaccination and get really sick from that, even from that. So he was very, very sick, and he was lying on the bed and he was dying, and so that's where we come to here. So Lord Chaitanya came to see him, and he put his hand on his heart. He heard he was going to die, so he came. And Sarvabhauma and his wife had been fasting, and you know, they felt so bad. They felt like they'd made such a great offense because, you know, Lord Chaitanya had been offended in their house. And Lord Chaitanya put his hand on his heart and he said, "The heart of a Brahman is by nature very clean, so it is a good place for Krishna to sit. Why have you allowed jealousy to sit there also? Matsarya chandala hikene ihan vasalai parama pavitrasthane apavitra kaile. Why have you allowed jealousy to sit there also? Because of this you have become like a chandala, lowest of men, and you have also contaminated the most purified place, your heart." Chandala is a dog eater, so that's a very low position in society. But even a dog eater can become a devotee. Actually, when I was in the Philippines, I asked them. They said about half of the devotees before, because that's a normal food there. So. But they gave it up. It's not as sinful, actually. "Due to association with Sarvabhauma, all your contamination is vanquished. When a person's heart is cleansed of all contamination, he's able to chant the Maha Mantra, Hare Krishna. Kamasa, Kamasa Gucci Le Jiva Krishna Namalai." When the heart is cleansed of all contamination, he's able to, and the contamination he's talking about is envy. Srimad Bhagavatam in the first verse says, you know, Paramat Nirmat Saranam Satam, that a non-envious person can understand the Srimad Bhagavatam. Envious person, even if they hear it, they won't understand it. We don't force it on the envious people, but we present to everyone. Envious people just go away. They don't want to hear it. They want to hear about themselves. They want to hear about, they can't stand to hear about, you know, Krishna being the supreme enjoyer. So then he said, "Get up and chant. Tumi Lao Krishna Nam." Get up and chant. So, just to finish up, because you won't be here for the rest of it. But so Amoga got up and he started dancing. He was on his deathbed, but he stood up and began to dance and chant, mad with ecstatic love, dancing emotionally. And he had all ecstatic symptoms: trembling, tears, jubilation, trance, perspiration, faltering voice. Seeing these waves of ecstatic emotion, Lord Chaitanya began to laugh. So we have a ways to go in our dancing, but the dance, when we want to dance, when there's kirtan, that's like the first symptom of ecstasy. It's very nice. Then we gradually come to all these, we get perspiration sometimes. See a lot of devotees. Bhakti Tirthamaraj used to get completely soaked immediately, you know, within a few minutes. Rishi John Swami was like that. And within a few minutes of kirtan, was soaking wet. I mean, we work hard in the kirtan. So he fell down at the Lord's feet and was begging forgiveness. And he began, you know, slapping his face and saying, hey, this mouth is blaspheming you. And, you know, he was slapping his face over and over again. It was getting all swollen up. So Gopinath Acharya grabbed his hands and stopped him. And then Lord Chaitanya embraced him and said, because you're the son-in-law of Sarvabhauma, then I like you. You're mine, you know. Everyone is dear to me, and even his dog, his servants, his dog. Always chant the Maha Mantra, Aparade Nahi Sadat Lao Krishna Nam Etabali Prabhu Aila Sarvabhaumastam. Amoga, always chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra and do not commit any further offenses. After giving Amoga this instruction, Lord Chaitanya went to Sarvabhauma's house. And then, so Lord Chaitanya told him, you know, he's your son-in-law, he's a child, why are you getting so upset? And you should stop fasting. You know, take your bath and go to the temple and see Lord Jagannath and come back and eat your lunch, and then I'll be happy. I'll stay here until you come back. And Sarvabhauma said, why did you bring Amoga back to life? It'd be better if he died. Couldn't, you know, he's too much disturbed, you know, because he is so much attached to Lord Chaitanya. Said, Amoga's a child and he's your son. The father does not take the faults of the son very seriously, especially when he's maintaining him. Now he's become a Vaishnava and he's offenseless and you can bestow your mercy upon him. Sarvabhauma said, you go and see Lord Lord Jagannath, and then when I get my bath, I'll go there. Lord Chaitanya told Gopinath, stay here and tell me when Sarvabhauma has taken his prasad. After saying this, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went to see Lord Jagannath, and Sarvabhauma took his bath and went there, and then they came home and accepted prasad. So this is the particular characteristic of Lord Chaitanya's pastimes, that he's completely merciful. And one who hears this pastime with faith and love will attain the shelter of the Lord's lotus feet very soon. Chaitanya Charitamrita is full of those kind of blessings. Sometimes in the Bhagavatam it gives what sounds like a material blessing. You can have that if you want. You know, if you want to get powerful, Kshatriya, or have lots of children, or get rich, you can, but that's not very intelligent. But Chaitanya Charitamrita is always offering this kind of benediction that you can get love for Krishna. It's so many places that, you know, the things we're doing, that we do every day, so many things that will give this love for Krishna. But we have to take it seriously then, because it's given. But, you know, if you don't take it, or you get a gift and you don't open it, or you throw it away, you know, then Krishna is giving unlimitedly. There's a lot of nice, even other leelas are mentioned here. Like the brahmanas in Lord Chaitanya's time, they were not happy with him. When the Muslims complained to the Qazi, he didn't take it very seriously, because he thought Muslims are always unhappy about the, you know, the Hindus. And they were saying, you know, they're always chanting, you know, the name of God. And they said, these Hindus, they have these names of God, the names of Krishna. And we have to work with them, so we have to say these names. And then we get, you know, we start chanting. We don't like that. I remember once I went to one place in Fiji in a junkyard to find something for our van. And the guy was a Muslim. And he said, oh yeah, I know Krishna, he works over there for me, and I know Rama, he's over there, and, you know. So he was chanting. He didn't. I thought they were ordinary people, but, you know, they were telling Haridas, why do you chant this sinful Hindu name of God? Why can't you? You're born in a high family. He said, you're born in a great family, why don't you chant, you know, why don't you chant Allah or whatever? And then Haridas told him, how can the name of God be belong to any particular, you know, bodily conception. So when the Hindus, they came and they were saying that, you know, this loud chanting is bogus. It's not Hindu dharma. Lord Chaitanya made it up. And you know, it's a disturbance to the Lord. And the Lord's going to leave because he's disturbed by this loud chanting. And besides that, he's getting all these low-class people to chant the name of God. And low-class people aren't supposed to, only Brahmanas by birth. That was the first contamination of Kali Yuga, is the Brahmanas. And they came up with this idea that only if you're born in a Brahmin family can you be a Brahmin. And then it doesn't matter how you act. And that has come down now worse and worse. So when Prabhupada was good, Bhakti Siddhanta was criticized, Lord Chaitanya was criticized. So he was, you know, going everywhere and everybody's chanting, fishermen. So they were really worried. They said that the holy name will lose its potency. It will become contaminated if these low-class people touch it. This is how they, how much they didn't understand anything. They're brahmanas, they knew so many scripture, they can do so many yajnas, you know, with all the mantras and mudras and everything, but they didn't know anything Krishna. What is Krishna? They don't know that Krishna, they're thinking Krishna can become contaminated, but Krishna is pure, uncontaminated, can't become contaminated, and anything that touches Krishna will become purified, no matter how contaminated it is. Even the dirtiest heart, the dirtiest mind, of Kali Yuga, if they contact Krishna and take it, and we're seeing that, the effect of the holy name all over the world, how many people are, you know, getting freed from sinful reactions, so they become this, yesham twantikatam papam, free from all sinful reactions. Acted piously so that one can contact devotees, one can give up the sinful, follow the regulative principles, I mean, giving up sinful activities in this life. Then, te dwanda moha nirmukta, we can become free, liberated from the dwanda, the dualities. Everyone is actually controlled by duality. We hear, you know, Toshna, Sukha Dukha Da, you know, hot, cold, happiness and distress. That's some of them. And then Krishna gives others in the 12th chapter of Bhagavad Gita what kind of people are dear to him, right? Equal in honor and dishonor. Right? Think about that. Insult and praise. Praise and blame, you know. Who can be equal if, you know, somebody is blaming you for something you didn't do, not get upset about it. Right? Of course, if someone praises us for something we didn't do, we might think, well, thank you very much. You know, we won't say, well, I didn't do that, you know. But equal. And the only way to really do that, artificially, it'll never work. But if we understand that actually Krishna's doing everything and whatever comes in our face is actually Krishna, the Super Soul, directing someone, and we know it's Krishna, then we can think, well, how would, you know, what would Krishna want me to do? Not what will let my emotions run off, you know, let me react. Rather learn how to respond to things, think about it a little bit, rather than just immediately respond to whatever comes. What, you know, get puffed up if somebody praises us, get angry if someone blames us. So, free from all these dualities, think fat and skinny, short and tall, rich and poor, you know, old and young, it's all dualities. And practically everybody is, you know, moved by trying to avoid one and get the other. Right? You know, I want to get rich, I don't want to be poor, I want to be warm, I don't want to be cold, I want to be happy, I don't want to be sad, I want to be healthy, you know. And just everywhere there's advertisements, you know, offering us these things. So when one can get free, one is free from that, when he chants the holy name, then we can, bhajanti mam dridhavrata, then we can serve Krishna with determination. And not give it up in spite of, you know, all the difficulties that will come along. Yesterday, Govinda Prabhu mentioned things like that. In war, there may be casualties. You know, we could take a war on Maya. You know, there's going to be difficult times sometimes. But, so here we see Lord Chaitanya's relationships with different people. Sarvabhauma was, you know, actually a great devotee, but previously he was the biggest Mayavadi. And Lord Chaitanya, we heard how he patiently heard him talk for 7 days, speaking all, you know, Mayavadi philosophy. And he was the world chief of Mayavadi philosophers, logicians. All sannyasis from all over the world were coming to study Sarvabhauma. And he was thinking that Krishna Chaitanya, he's very young, and he's a sannyasi, and he's also very, very beautiful. And it'll be very hard for him to maintain sannyas, you know, because of his beauty, there'll be many people after him in his youth. So if I can teach him this Mayavadi philosophy very nicely, then he'll be able to maintain his ashram. So Lord Chaitanya just sat there listening, and he never commented, he never flinched, you know, just looked bored, actually. Finally, Sarvabhauma said, you know, what's the matter? Don't you understand anything I'm saying? You know? And, you know, do you have any questions? He said, no. He said, what you're saying is, the Vedanta is bright like the sun, but you're covering it all over like clouds. And then Sarvabhauma said, what do you mean? You know, because everybody thought he was, you know, had the greatest teacher, and everything he was saying was the most wonderful thing. And then Lord Chaitanya explained, and it's quite a bit to that discussion. But he convinced Sarvabhauma that Krishna is the Supreme Lord. And then Sarvabhauma became convinced that he was the Supreme Lord, because Sarvabhauma asked to explain the Atmarama verse in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So Lord Chaitanya said, well, let's first hear, you know, your explanation. So Sarvabhauma explained it from 9 different angles of explanation, which no one else in the world could do. No one else could understand it so deeply or explain it so nicely. So then Lord Chaitanya said, well, let me see what I can do. And he explained it in, what, 64 different ways or something, without touching the 9 ways that Sarvabhauma explained it. So then Sarvabhauma was totally flabbergasted and realized that only God can talk like this. No one else, it's impossible that any ordinary person could do this. So then he understood that this was the Supreme Lord, and all of a sudden, all of his learning and all of his scholarship and everything was glorifying the holy name of Krishna and glorifying, you know, that Krishna is the Supreme Lord, and everyone was shocked because he was a Rajguru, his guru, the king in the whole kingdom, and all of a sudden, you know, he was crying and lamenting that he was just wasting his life. He said he was like a dried up oil cake, you know what that is? Those soybean chunks that we used to be dog food, that's the oil cake. When you take the oil out, then you get this dried up thing left over, and then if you soak it in water long enough, it becomes something that the animals like to eat. So he was saying he was like that, but now all of a sudden he came to life, and you know, and Lord Chaitanya was so happy. So, and another time Lord Chaitanya, he listened also, let's see which one was that. You know, he was a good listener, we were talking about that, and then he would charm everybody. Oh, that Digvijay Pandit. When he was young, actually, Lord Chaitanya was Nimai Pandit. He was very young, young teenager. But, you know, he was a great scholar. And there was this Digvijay Pandit that is a great pundit, and he would travel around and argue. And no one could defeat him. You know, they would have a debate, and it wasn't like an argument, it was a debate, you know, it's like intelligent, you know, not an argument is usually just an emotional thing. But he would debate and then defeat. He would always win. He was very rich and famous and traveled with the entourage and elephants and people fanning him and trumpets. And he was coming to Navadvipa, and Navadvipa was famous for scholarship, but they were worried that, you know, if they're leading scholars were defeated by this, and it would reduce, you know, their fame and fortune, and not as many students would come there anymore. So they decided to have him debate with Nimai Pandit. They thought, well, if he loses, then, you know, they'll say he was just a child anyway. Not a big deal that you've defeated a child. So Lord Chaitanya was very merciful. He didn't publicly confront this guy. He sat by the banks of the Ganges with a few students. And they were worried, you know, they were saying, you know, they were worried that, you know, their teacher was going to lose. And he was waiting for this guy to come and take his bath. And Lord Chaitanya explained to him, he said, don't worry. He said, he's very proud, and Krishna does not like pride, and he will smash his pride. And he gave, he listed off like a Hiranyakasipu and Ravana and Hayaya and a bunch of previous kings who had been very, very proud and were smashed. He said, don't worry. So he came and Lord Chaitanya, they met him, and the guy was saying, ho, 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 you know. This is a small boy, and he's not even a logician, he's a grammarian. You know, what is the use of confronting this guy? You know, it's not worthy of my status. You know, like fight someone your own size. You know. So Lord Chaitanya said, well, let's hear you compose some praise of the Ganga. So this guy had a, you know, he was empowered. He was a great devotee of Saraswati. And he just composed 100 slokas in glorification of the Ganga and just talked. Actually, Chaitanya Bhagavat says he talked for 3 hours. And Lord Chaitanya just listened to him. So then he was finished, and Lord Chaitanya said, that was very nice, but there's some mistakes. And he said, it's impossible, I've never made a mistake. You know, I can't possibly make a mistake. It's perfect composition in every way. So Lord Chaitanya picked out one, like the, I think it was the 8th verse he spoke or something. He started taking it apart, pointed out so many mistakes. And so the guy was like, first place that Lord Chaitanya could remember it, and he, you know, that was enough. That shocked him completely. And then he couldn't, he had to agree that these were mistakes. He did technical mistakes. I only remember one of them. He said something about the wife of the husband of Parvati. Anyway, it was like a double thing. And so he said, this is misleading. And he pointed out like 8 or 9 like serious mistakes. They're all in the purport of Prabhupada. And so he became, normally when he debates someone, he would ask questions and the other person would get so bewildered they couldn't understand the question even, so they would just give up and he would win. He didn't even have to debate. And he would always be empowered by Saraswati to speak perfectly. When Saraswati empowers someone, like in Lord Ramachandra's Leela, that Mandara, the hunchback woman, When she was trying to convince Kaikeyi, you know, that Ramachandra had evil, Ramachandra and other had the evil intentions, you know, to get rid of her son and send him away or make her the maidservant and everything. And she was saying, no, it's impossible. Ram loves me, I love Ram. So then, because this was Leela and it had to happen, Saraswati empowered this hunchback woman, and she spoke in such a way that Kaikeyi, who loved Ram more than she loved her own son, he became completely bewildered and did all what she did. And so this, he was bewildered. How can this happen? And he couldn't even speak. He couldn't reply anything. He just slithered away, you know. But it wasn't a public event because only a few of Lord Chaitanya's students, or maybe a few of his students. And he went home and he was just like bewildered. He just crying and praying to Mother Saraswati. She came to him and she said, don't worry, you know, this was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You don't have to feel too bad that you're defeated. We're, most of us maybe still trying to defeat Krishna, and therefore we can't get the full nectar. But so then he realized that, and he gave up everything. He gave up all his entourage and all his, you know, competition, and he went to Lord Chaitanya and surrendered and became a humble Vaishnava sannyasi for the rest of his life. So Lord Chaitanya, you know, by hearing from him, he learned, you know, what he was saying. And that's, we heard that yesterday, hearing, listening. You know, when we're dealing with people, and all of us, like, I want to sit up here and talk, I want everyone to listen. We all want to do that. Somehow or other, I'm so puffed up that Krishna gives me this chance all the time. Bhakti Siddhanta, what do you say? He's sitting up there and people are thinking, look at that proud animal, what is he doing sitting up there? And so puffed up and, you know, thinking everyone should listen to him. But it's our duty. So we want to speak, we want to teach. But teaching, like preaching, that word preaching, a lot of times, like in India, if we say preaching to people, they don't like that, because even Indian devotees and neophytes, because they've heard these Christian missionaries who are so fanatic, they always talk about preaching, you know. St. Francis of Assisi, the great Christian saint, he said, you should always be preaching, and sometimes you should talk. He said, let your walk, you don't walk unless your walking is preaching. Like Bhakti Tirthamraja used to always say, let your walk your talk. You know, example is better than precept. Yadyada charati shestas tattadadetaro janaha. You know, whatever great men do, others follow. So the best preaching is a good example of a loving community, happy families, happy children, especially, because when people see that, then they want to take part. And we have to manifest the teachings, to be a Brahmin scholar, to know, you know, all the Vedas or something. There's people that even know they're scholars, academic, even in the West. They study Srimad Bhagavatam in great detail. And they think they know, you know, everything. I met one guy who was out in Camden Town in London. And one guy went by. He's a nice looking old, well, I thought he's my age probably. But. So I said, come on, stop. And he was like, I said, come on, you know. And somehow he stopped. And he said, yeah, I was religious earlier, but, you know, now he was a... He's a professor at the London School of Economics and Philosophy professor, previously been at Oxford. And he was very friendly. So we had a nice long talk, and, you know, I was trying to explain to him about bhakti and how it comes down and have to be humble. And he said, oh yeah, that's what the Christians say, and he quoted off a whole bunch of that, and the Muslims say that also, and these people, every, you know, I know all that. And he did know. And he also was interesting because he was a colleague of that Richard Dawkins. You know him?
Of course.
You know him. Who, anybody know Richard Dawkins? You don't go in the Karmi bookstores, huh? A year before last, when I walked down Oxford Street, and they have one big bookstore, and they have a big shelf there with the bestsellers. So number one, you know, boom, 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 like 10 copies. The God Delusion by Richard Dawkins, a famous atheist in Oxford University. He's a big Darwinist. And inside the book it says, this book proves, absolutely proves, that there's the impossible that there can be a supreme personality of Godhead, and that the worst thing that ever happened to human society is religion. And it was a best-selling book for a year, you know. It came back, it was number 5, like a month later, then it was back up there. We see it all over the world. They said when it came out in Germany, every bookstore had big piles of it. The God delusion. And this guy told me that, he said, if you're looking for a religious fanatic in the world, that Richard Dawkins is a champion. He's the most fanatic for his religion. That there's no God. And religion is the worst thing. He's on the radio all the time. He's very famous. And of course, all the reviewers said his arguments are completely stupid, and, you know, scientifically, and, you know, he says things that, no, that are completely wrong and everything, but, you know, foolish people get bewildered. That's it. We have a lot of competition now. There's another book called God is Not Great. And God is Not Great. How Religion Ruined Everything.
Another
book. Huh?
Another religion.
Yeah. And there's Atheist Universe, and there's quite a few of them. So when we preach to a lot of people, we have to be a little bit aware of this. But Lord Chaitanya, you know, he could deal with everybody. And we just carry this message, you know, get up and chant, you know, everybody. Get up and chant the holy name, like, you know, get this envy out of the heart. If we're envious of someone, then, you know, how can we preach to them? We want what they have, you know, we have to feel something, that we have the most valuable thing. Not that I'm great, but, you know, that we have, somehow or other, we have the treasure, we have the holy name. We have Krishna, and we want, you know, people to take that. So when they see the devotees blissfully chanting and dancing, and they want to join in. We were last Saturday in Soho, at Soho area for Harinam, and famous Saturday night Harinam. And so many people joined in. Just amazing. They just start dancing, even in Israel and Tel Aviv. You know, people walk by and then the little kids start dancing. And then mostly girls, they join in. They love to get into the dance around, you know. And everywhere. The people can't help it. When they see that ecstasy, everybody wants to be happy. Everybody likes dancing, so we have so many dances, and, you know, discotheques and raves and all these things. But they're dog dancing, you know. They're just dancing to attract the opposite sex or the same sex. And they don't know about Krishna, but dancing in the kirtan is ecstatic and it's purifying. When we clap our hands and all the sinful activities fly off, and, you know, we get good exercise. You get everything you need. Aerobic. I laugh sometimes in L.A. A lot of times in the Arctic, a lot of devotees don't dance very much, but some of them go to the club for aerobics. You know, stick your foot up, do that, you know, and there's somebody screaming and there's rock music blasting, and, you know, but you can do that in the kirtan also. And if we get out, and Prabhupada said, if you do that every day, 30 minutes, you don't need other exercise. You're dancing and chanting, and you get all the, and, but also get, you know, all the, get purified by the holy name. It can't be contaminated. So anyone who chants will get purified. There's no one that's not qualified. Even if their motive is no good, you know, if they chant, they're going to get purified. And when they really contact Krishna. So there are many so-called brahmanas. Prabhupada is mentioning here. They're envious of the Vaishnavas. Prabhupada faced that in India. There's people even that worship the deity. My body for worship is murti, but they don't think it. They think it's just some, you know, focus your mind. But I went to one exhibition they had in New York. It was called Darshan, Introduction to Hindu Devotion. A huge exhibition, it went all around the world. And quite impressive, you know, had little models of temples from all over India, and, you know, had some nice things. And they had made one movie, and they wanted to justify, you know, puja, darshan. So they were having these various Hindus that were rich people, doctors, and, you know, big people, so it showed impressive. And they, you know, they were saying, but they all said that they deity is not God. God is something else behind the deity. And the deity is like your radio or television. You know, you switch it on when you want to contact whatever God is. That's not really known. So that's the difference. They have the altar, they have the deity, they do puja. But the devotee is understanding this as Krishna. And, you know, when we're cooking and Krishna's eating, and when we're dancing, Krishna's darshan means Krishna's seeing us. And all those things. So there's a difference. It looks the same. But the devotee, you know, is understanding. A very advanced devotee can, you know, converse with Krishna and see that. Prabhupada once, a devotee, said that some people think the deity doesn't eat when we offer. Prabhupada, I see him eat. Stop walking. I see him eat. I'm not a fool like you. Then he explained how Krishna can eat by looking at it, he can eat by hearing the prayer. He said even he can actually eat it and put it back. And then when we come and we get the remnants, he said it's a good deal. Krishna never, he always gives it back, only it's much improved, you know. And that's something to think about. We offer bhoga to Krishna, there's no loss, it becomes much better. Practically every devotee, you know, we want to eat prasad, and we don't like, you know, even ones that get, you know, a little off, they still want to have prasad, and they don't like to eat bhoga. They offer whatever they get, right? Make some effort, because it becomes better. So, whatever we offer to Krishna, then we can offer mind, body, soul, everything we have. The more we offer to Krishna, the more better everything gets. There's no loss. We're never going to be at a loss, although we think so. I better keep something. I keep a little bit just in case, you know, it's an emergency. And if Krishna is really not, you know, the loving Supreme Lord like he says he is. So that as much as we don't surrender, then we'll, just like a fish out of water, we have that example. You know, if you put the fish, you know, partially in the water, it might get a little excited, but then it still can't live, you know. The fish has to be in the water. And then the fish in the water, even if there's a big flood, there's heavy current, it can just swim away. Even in the biggest waves on the ocean, little tiny fish just swim around. Right? We get knocked all over the place. Even the surfers, you know, have fun, but the little fish, they just swim around. They don't have a problem with it. But if you take that fish out of the water, then he's just flipping. And so the example is, as a soul, we're, you know, meant to be in devotional service. We're meant to be surrendered to Krishna. So if we're not surrendered, we're just flopping, you know, exhibiting symptoms of life. You know, the fish can... We went for Harinam in one big fish market in Bangkok. It was a really big Chinese fish market. So they have these huge fish, and some of them are just a head. But, you know, they were still, you know, exhibiting symptoms of life, somehow or other. So they got some mercy by hearing the holy name. Fishmongers. Anybody likes. We went in the meat market in Athens one time. They all picked up, they started dancing around and beating their knives on the wood, and you know, they were really happy to see us. It was a huge, you know, place. Devotees go everywhere. We want, and we don't discriminate that anybody's unqualified. But as much as we surrender and we give everything in our full time, thoughts and activities, everything is for Krishna, then we are purified and we'll become completely happy. Even if we're 90% surrendered, 95% surrendered, still, we're not fully in the water, and, you know, there'll be a problem. You can put that fish in a beautiful boat, you know, that won't help him, right? You can put him in, you know, give him like that clay we have, a fish clay, Prabhupada like that one, you know. Yeah, I want to try the material world. Okay, go ahead. But can't last. So the fish can last, you know, a while, flipping and flopping, but And we, if we throw us in the water also, we can't live. You know, we're in this body. So when we're in the material world, you know, we have to have our scuba tank or our air hose, and you know, have to come up for breath every once in a while, you know, go to the temple or something, you know, surrender a little bit, you know, make some prayers. But if we can really give up everything, that's what we have to know, that as a goal, and be trying for that, you know, on that path, even though we might, you know, can't maybe do it any good. But Lord Shri Krishna will save anyone at the time of death if we've been trying to, you know, give up everything. At the time of death, he takes, okay, you know, you made it. You can still try if you've been trying, even if we, you know, apparently haven't made it. So these leelas of Lord Chaitanya are completely sublime, and just hearing them, remembering them, and there's so many of them, and there's Krishna's leelas also, and they're very easy to remember, especially the childhood leelas of Krishna. And all of the childhood leelas, you know, each demon that Krishna killed in Vrindavan, you know, is representing different anartas. And just by hearing those pastimes and remembering them, the anartas are finished. Quite nice. Mercy. That's why, and Krishna gave his childhood pastimes because they're especially attractive and easy to remember. You know, killing the various demons. Lord Chaitanya didn't kill demons, he liberated everyone, gave them all the mercy, and made them into Vaishnavas, Jagai and Madai, and you know, we know many, many, and unlimited. And all of us, you know, that someone heard from Lord Chaitanya, and they became ecstatic, they saw him chanting and dancing, they started chanting and dancing, and someone saw them, and someone saw them, and it's still going on. People are seeing us, and they're becoming, chanting and dancing all over the world. We go on Harinam, and you know, like, it's inconceivable how many people nowadays, especially everyone has a camera, you know? Right? Everyone, little kids, you know, they got their phone, and everybody's taking movies, and you know, so they're going to at least once look at them, you know, and remember that, you know, and tell people we saw them in Paris, we saw them in London, we saw them in, you know, everywhere they go, the tourists, and if we're out there, they'll see us. And, you know, after they get purified, they want to see it again and again. We had some devotees in Israel that were worried that Israelis don't like to see that, you know, it looks like some kind of cult or something. Of course, we find many do like it. I suppose there's some that don't, some of the fanatics. But in London, one Israeli girl came running into the temple, you know, and she said, I saw that, and I saw that Harinam. Well, she didn't know it, but she said, I saw that. I had to come and see where it's coming from. You know, she started coming to the temple every day. And that, any kind of people, it doesn't matter what country, and, you know, what kind of people. And in London there's many, many Muslims, and they come and they want to take a picture with me, you know, because they like my weird clothes. But, you know, they the eyes mask and all kind of, you know, everybody's taking pictures because it's all attractive. Krishna's all attractive. So we take it. Preach all the time, then sometimes you can speak. When Govinda was talking yesterday, I was remembering how people would tell us all the time when we were first going for book to speak, you Hare Krishnas, you never listen to anyone. You know, because we'd meet anyone and, no, you got it, you know. We didn't want to hear the, you know, the mundane talk. But then we learned, you know, you go out, people, like, when I went every day for book distribution, I never had to read a newspaper or listen to news. I knew everything. Because the people just tell you everything. You know, thank you very much. And take the book. And they, because you listen to them, they're, you know, this is my friend. And take the book. And whatever they were into, we'd say, yeah, right, that's the nature. That's what this book is about. Because Krishna is everything. It covers everything. So Chaitanya Charitamrita is highly recommended. It's easy reading, but Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati said that actually we cannot understand the Bhagavatam until we read Chaitanya Charitamrita. But Lord Chaitanya is a personified Bhagavatam, and he perfectly preached Srimad Bhagavatam. Whenever he's preaching, he's giving so much Srimad Bhagavatam, so he's showing exactly how it applies to every argument and every situation. And we're in Lord Chaitanya's Leela, this movement is a continuation. They chanted the holy name, they danced, and what else? Kirtan Nacho Prasad. Right? Those three things, that's what they did. Lord Chaitanya would be always concerned that everybody, you know, he's staying here, he didn't like Sarvabhauma fasting. You know, get up, take your bath, and take prasada. And Sarvabhauma was trying to get rid of him, you know, you go to the temple. Take prasad. Sarvabhauma, Lord Chaitanya was very pleased when he took prasad without, you know, early in the morning, without having all his rituals. Because he was a smart brahmana before, so that everything is, you know, so many mantras and rituals and everything. So Sarvabhauma, the greatest Mayavadi, was converted by Lord Chaitanya's submissive hearing and then pointing out the defects in what he said and the glories of the holy name. The Mayavadi sannyasis, and Lord Chaitanya sat in the foot washing place, and then they said, come on, move up. He said, no, I'm just a Vaishnava, you're all big guys. And then they asked him, you know, why is he, the Mayavadi said, why are you just chanting, singing and dancing like a babuka, you know, a sentimentalist, stupid person? Why aren't you studying Vedanta? Sannyasi is supposed to study Vedanta. And Lord Chaitanya said, well, my guru told me, you're stupid, you're a fool, and you can't really study Vedanta, just chant all the time, chant the holy name. He said, that's what I'm doing. But then he explained in, you know, incredible philosophy, like what's wrong with all of Shankaracharya's teachings, and, you know, Harinama, 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 Vedakegala. Kaluva nasteva, 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 gatya. There's nothing else but the holy name in Kali Yuga. No other way, no other way, no other way. Vaishnava principles in Kali Yuga is to chant the holy name. There's no other religious process to compare with it. Jiva Goswami said in congregational chanting, no anarthas are considered the special thing. So we're very fortunate here. We have a lot of congregational chanting until 2 o'clock in the morning, a little after 2 o'clock. And still, if you made it to class, I made it somehow. Because this holy name, it has this effect, and it's purifying, but we have to constantly apply this medicine, these mantras. The mind, you can never think, now my mind is fine, I don't have to worry about it. Always have to keep chanting. And we see the ecstasy of the kirtan, and gradually we might at least theoretically learn, well, I should be chanting all the time. Because I want to be happy, right? I'm happy when I'm chanting, so why don't I chant all the time? Why not? You know, it doesn't make any sense, right? Think about it. When you know how ecstatic it is and how powerful and how wonderful, and why don't we do it all the time? Somehow or other. But we keep trying, and, you know, regulated life, fixed determination to chant at least a certain amount every day, and then gradually we come to be able to chant more and more. By the mercy of the devotees, the mercy of the spiritual master, the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, but especially the mercy of devotees, Lord Chaitanya gives us that chance. And the more we give Krishna, the more you give Krishna. And Lord Chaitanya broke open the storehouse of love of Godhead, and they started distributing it, and it just kept increasing. The more they distributed it, the more it increased. And Lord Chaitanya said, I'm a gardener, there's all these fruits of love of God, and I can't distribute them all, there's too much. And I need a lot of help for this. That's what we're supposed to do, find a way and means to somehow distribute to anybody and everybody, to your children, to your friends, to your, you know, to the public, to however, doesn't matter. Just dogs can chant, you know, to the trees and the forest. Just chant the holy name. So it's probably overtime, a little bit, huh? Because it's Sunday, but we have another day, what, more just chanting all day? Or?
Some seminar? No seminar.
So everyone can go to the kirtan. I saw the seminars are well attended. The Thai massage is quite well attended. It's actually Ayurvedic. The Thai, they learned from an Indian doctor like a very long time ago. And they preserved it very carefully. And in Thailand, in Japan they have Thai massage, and they were calling me and I said, you give me Thai fries, I'll come, you know. It costs like $5 for an hour and a half or something in Thailand, and there's a massage every other shop. In Japan it costs like $80 an hour or something. So I never... But they have, in Thailand they have one society, it's a government-sponsored blind massagers. So they have their places all around and they're all blind, and they say that's it's the best work for a blind person, and you know, they're the most expert. They just start, you know, they're really good. So if you go to Thailand, we also have many devotees there. You can, the great Harinam. People love it, of course, like everywhere. And we have many, many devotees. We had 1,000 devotees for Ratha Yatra a couple of weeks ago. It was a big weekend on the 13th for Asia. It was a return Ratha Yatra in Puri. We had 2,000 devotees in Bali for Ratha Yatra. We had 1,500 in Singapore and 1,000 in Bangkok. Yeah. Increasing very fast in those places. Everywhere, actually. But there we can count very easily every time. Well, we can't believe how many show up. So, and there's Ratha Yatras all over. Jagannath is being very, very merciful. Right. One time I was at the Dead Sea, and I was walking down the Dead Sea, and I was chanting japa. One of the lifeguard girls, she said, are you Hare Krishna? I said, yeah. I said, are you Hare Krishna? She said, I don't know, maybe I think so, I might be, I don't know. And then she was actually studying Ayurveda, and she was a nurse or something at the lifeguard. And then she said she was in Amsterdam, like just wandering around Amsterdam. And then Ratha Yatra went past her, so she followed him. So therefore she's chanting. And that, you know, there's millions of people. Jagannath is so merciful. And Prabhupada said if they just, you know, of course he followed the card, he said, he told Jayananda Prabhu that if, when someone, you know, at the time of death, you remember your life like really quick. Even if you get really old, that starts to happen. I can testify with that. Radhanath Swami, his father is like 85 years old, and he told him, son, I've lived 85 years, and I'll tell you, it seems like a few minutes. Just, you know. So that movie shows at the time of death, and Prabhupada told him that if they've seen the Ratha Yatra, they've seen Jagannath, then when they get to that, they'll stop. Get stuck there. You know, mold it. We want to check that. What is that? See, when everything is just flashing by, all the sense gratification and all the, you know, fun and all the whatever he did, all the mistakes and suffering, everything goes like doesn't. But the Jagannath yet they'll remember. So what to speak of devotees who are chanting every day and seeing the deities every day. You know, all these things are one, even once is guaranteed, but it doesn't mean we should say, okay, yeah, I did it already. Yeah, I had my bath in the Ganga and Gorkhanima, now I can just party. Right? Because the door is open, but you got to go in, you know. Right? The path is there and the door is there, but if you just don't go, you know, Krishna's waiting for us and the space is reserved, but we just have to take it. The mercy is there for everyone, and whoever takes it gets it. And devotees are Panchakalpa tribute, they're very merciful, full of compassion. And without compassion, we can't go back to Godhead. Most important, very important thing. To feel concern for other people's suffering, and especially other devotees. I remember when I was a new devotee, I could not imagine that any devotee was not happy. I thought, you know, I was like an I somehow or other, I don't know, I was so miserable before. So I was just so happy to be a devotee, and I was going on Sankirtan all the time. And I couldn't think that anybody was not happy. Now and then I realized after a while that not everybody was chanting all the time, you know. Or somehow or other, and then gradually we start to also, you know, feel sometimes not so happy. You know, it starts to realize that we're not actually pure devotees and we don't have ecstatic love for Krishna, but we have the mercy. We just have to take it. The soul actually has all that. The soul is completely perfect, pure, and happy. So you're all taking it. Give it. Take more mercy, give more mercy. There's no limit to it. Lord Chaitanya's Prabhupada one, there was one devotee doing really crazy things and the devotees were getting really frustrated and Prabhupada kept giving mercy. Tamal Krishnamurti said, Prabhupada, but this guy, he's just, you know, he's doing this and that. And Prabhupada said, you have not understood the mercy of Lord Nityananda. And he said, there's no limit. Prabhupada said that the Vaishnava will fan, you know, when he sees a little spark of interest, like he's fanning. He said, but Lord Nityananda fans even if there's nothing. He just, and the installation of Gaur Nithai in Los Angeles, the big one, Prabhupada, it was amazing. He was so happy. It looked like Prabhupada, it looked like that many times, like his feet weren't touching the ground. You know, if you follow him on the walk, he just, you know, and devotees are running and keep up with him. And he just, like, didn't look like he was any effort. So he just, like, was all of a sudden standing in front of the deities, paying his obeisances. But in the lecture, he said, now, you know, he was probably crying, and he said, in order to get the mercy of Radha and Krishna, which is our goal to join them, Krishna Leela, we have to get the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. And to get the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, we have to get the mercy of Lord Nityananda. And then he said that to get the mercy of Lord Nityananda, you have to get the mercy of Jagai and Mother. And that means, what does that mean? Huh? That means get out there, you know, meet Jagai and Madai. Give them the holy name, you know, tell them about Krishna. Let them see the kirtan. Because that's how they first got a little bit purified, that they were camped out somewhere kind of near where the devotees were chanting and they could hear the kirtan. And Jagai was liking it. Although he said he didn't know what it was. They thought it was a wedding party or some Durga Puja or something. But they were thinking that's nice music, you know. Mm-hmm. And sometimes Jagai said, I like the way that Nima is dancing. So they got purified and then they were able to get the mercy of Lord Nityananda. So there's a world now, Prabhupada. And then he also said that, he said, at that time there was only two, Jagai and Madai. Mm-hmm. He said, I'm not bragging, but all of my disciples are Jagai and Madai. But Lord Chaitanya is so merciful. He's given everybody the holy name. Even Jagai and Madai were really bad. They were every kind of sin, even murder and, you know, rape and everything. Not just meat eaters and drunkards. But we see, like, devotees that when we do that drama, they're very expert at playing Jagai and Madai. We did that in the GVC meeting, we had some spontaneous dramas. And Ravindra Sarup was really good in Jagai. He was really good. You wouldn't expect that, but he was really good. Because it started, you know, we have a lot of experience. Devotees try to pray Prahlad or Narada Muni or something, it's not so easy. To do it, like, really perfectly. Sometimes I see some of the children really good at Prahlad. But gradually we learn. But we've all been saved, and we don't want to go back to that. We don't want to check it out, you know, if we grew up without it, you know, to see maybe there's some nectar there, right? to be Jagayan Mata. There's so many, everything, you know, now so many drunkards everywhere, you know, foolish fools. And, but they like the holy name. Everybody gets purified because it's Krishna. So we can stop unless you want to ask some questions or give some comments. Yeah.
I have one small question if I can. Of course, Prabhupada preached anyone, and I was just thinking like this, Prabhu, that he encouraged even if others found him very disturbing.
So to what?
Prabhupada kept on encouraging this person who was disturbing the other devotees. But at the same time, I heard that Prabhupada also said, like, no criticism, no relation to the temple. And how should we relate to that? Who to preach to? Should we preach to everyone?
We preach to everyone, but this guy was, you know, he wasn't like, he was just doing like these crazy kind of, you know, trying to learn how to do yoga magic tricks and stuff like that. And he was an Indian, so Prabhupada was being especially merciful, you know. But finally he left, you know, Prabhupada knew he didn't go. So it requires intelligence and discrimination, you know. We approach everyone, we present it to everyone, but the ashram, you know, is a sanctified place. I know, like in Durban, the temple says right of admission reserved or something. You know, it's our place, so if someone is a disturbance, we can't say no, you know, black people or no white people or no Russians or anything. You know, but if someone is acting in a disturbing way, then we can ask them to leave legally. And so in the ashram, you know, things have to be pure. People, if they're following the principles and they're submissive and they're trying, and, you know, we put up with it even though they may have doubts, and we have to take care of people, like raising children. Right? And, you know, children are sometimes very difficult. But if we can take care of them, and, so, but if someone's just a disturbance, they're critical of everyone, you know, then they're unhealthy for everyone else, and they're not, it doesn't help their Krishna consciousness either if they're making offenses to devotees. The better they go away from devotees. But we should be expert enough to, that's why we need to let people know before they come in, like, if you, like in a hotel, you know, they have a little list of all the things that you're not supposed to do, and if you do those things, they can say, get out. And you can't say, well, I paid, and you let me in, you get out. You know, no gambling, can't bring anyone to your room, you know, can't do this, can't do that. No, no, in Japan, no incense in the room, you know. You can smoke, but we burn incense sometimes, and 5 minutes later the phone is ringing, and they're freaking out, you know. They said, nobody will take that room next time, you know, but the cigarette smoke is okay. That's Kali Yuga. But they, you know, we have rules, and we have to, you know, be strict, but kind. So we have, you know, all kinds of venues to deal with the people who are, you know, still not following all the rules and regulations, to attract them to do it. Right.
I know that there are a lot of very interesting points in your lecture, so it was fun. But one of the ones that I particularly had a memory about is when you were talking about mind bodies. You know, as we began with the three phases.
Yeah.
You know, mind, and I remember the story about when Bhishma was on his deathbed and Yudhishthira was trying to extract as much information from Bhishma as he could. Yeah. And one of his questions was, well, can you tell me what's right? You know, impersonal or personal?
Yeah.
You know, give us the answer. And Bhishma said, well, actually, in the Vedas, both are right. You know, you're not gonna get the answer from the Vedas, because the Vedas will support either position. He said, but I like Krishna. That's the answer. So it is personal, it is feeling. it wasn't a theoretical thing. Mm-hmm. And he said, you can choose what you like, but I like Krishna.
Yeah, I wish I liked Krishna. Yeah, Bhishma knew Krishna. The first thing he did was that Vishnu Sahasranam. Because you think this is your cousin, but it's the Supreme Lord right there. And that was the whole essence. Everything else was just, you know, a dharma. You know, how to manage the kingdom. And it's valuable reading for any devotees also. So learn how to live and, you know, take care of people. Because we need to take care of devotees. And inspire everyone to really know Krishna, have a relationship with Krishna. But that's reflected in our relationship with each other. And how we treat devotees is, you know, Krishna's in everyone's heart, and the devotees are very dear to Krishna, like we see. This Amoga, you know, just because he was in the family of Sarvabhauma, Lord Chaitanya loved him and blessed him. And same thing in Srivasa's house, had all the servants, the dog, everyone who loved it, and Benedict everyone. So Lord Krishna loved all the devotees. So if we treat devotees very nicely, then, you know, Krishna takes us into his, it's Krishna's family. If we're working to do anything for devotees, some people are organizing big festivals for the devotees. Some people may be just, you know, helping one devotee, give him a massage, or prasadam, you know, a ride somewhere, or, you know. But loving, just like Lord Chaitanya, he loved everyone. Lord Nityananda is called Akroda Paramananda. There's a song by Lokchanda. You know what that means, right? Akroda, anger. Kama Krodha Lova. So Akroda means no anger, and Paramananda, the supreme bliss. That's Lord Nityananda, and he just went everywhere giving the holy name, just begging people, please chant, that's all I want. I don't ask for anything. Just chant Krishna. And some people chased him away, insulted him, even to the point of Jagai and Madai, you know, they just chased him and he got away, jumped in the Ganga. For the second time he got hit over the head. But then he still blessed him. And we preach to everyone, but, you know, if someone's completely envious and they won't take it, then we say, excuse me, I'm sorry to bother you. You might be better off somewhere else. Right? Yeah. The spiritual world is based on love, and the material world is based on envy.
Yeah.
You know, envy means competition. I have to get to the top.
Mm.
And whatever, you know, depending on the modes of nature, some people will kill someone if they're angry. So, you know, make bad publicity about them, steal what they have. You know. But love is the spiritual world. Happy to see, you know, that's a transcendental envy is, if I see that he's serving Krishna very, very nicely, much better than me, I may feel like, well, I want to do that, you know, and he's kind of showing me that it can be done, so I'll try to do it also. It's not exactly envy, but it's, you know, instead of thinking, well, I'm going to tell everybody that actually he's not doing what it looks like, you know, he's not really in the judge, and he's just putting on the dress of the judge, and you know, the Prabhupada gave that joke, he's not getting paid. He's just a little boy in the village, he's a naughty boy, he can't be a judge. And he said, oh, I saw him, he's on the bench, and oh, he's not getting paid, you know, he's just an actor. So, and to give up envy means we have to give up lust. And we can use all these things. Lots you can use in Krishna service by wanting more and more service. Good idea. So they had the songs in the 60s, you know, so many songs about love. And some people, you know, some of us were fortunate to come to Krishna. Let's all get together and love one another right now. But they thought love meant physical. But we want to love the person and have a relationship with the person, the soul. And that is only when Krishna's in the center can we really have that. Okay, thank you very much. Prasadam might be ready. I hope everyone thanks Parasaram Prabhu. He's cooking lunch and breakfast.
All of the UK, yeah.
Yeah. Well, in London, if you go out for book distribution or meeting people,